So why is Iran winning? Well, it has to do with a missile, a single missile, and the U.S. looking in the wrong place. Here is what else you need to know about today.
A new file indicates there is Ukrainian interference in Iraq, and there are groups we are discovering that are carrying out limited bombing operations.
Iranians and North Koreans already attacked us.
He wants to expand the war. It's his last best chance in his overwrought mind.
So much news having to do with both Iran and what's happening right now in Ukraine, as well as Iraq, interestingly enough. We're going to talk about all this here on The Effect. Let's do it. Hey, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'm so glad that you're there. You know, I got to thinking last night about some of the stories that we've been covering lately and how it is that the United States, right, my country, and the president, Mr. Trump, were so caught off guard. I mean, let's face it. The truth is the truth. Iran is kicking the crap out of the United States right now. And it seems to me that it's happened because the United States made the mistake of literally looking in the wrong place.
They got some evil intentions. We cannot let them have a nuclear weapon.
Nobody wants Iran to have a nuclear weapon. You want Iran to have a nuclear weapon? You think it's good?
We don't need the Hormuz Strait, but we do it because we have to do it, because we cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon.
Denuking of Iran. Denuclearization of Iran.
Nuclear weapon, nuclear weapon, nuclear weapon, nuclear weapon, nuclear weapon. We got to find the nuclear weapons. They've got nuclear weapons, right? You see what I mean? The U.S. was so concerned about Iran's nuclear bombs that they did not have, that they failed to look for what Iran really did have, a missile system that they had built up over the years that is literally right now beating the crap out of the United States weaponry and its defense systems. Night in, night out, and just about every place you look. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about when I say this. This is Iran's... We got a picture of it. This is Iran's Kabar Shikan missile. This thing is amazing. It's a super weapon. Range, 1,500 kilometers. Guided by satellites. A 550 kilogram warhead. And it does some things that very few missiles can do. No less a missile like this that's worth a fraction. This thing is less than $1 million. That's nothing when it comes to weaponry. And certainly in comparison to most of the stuff the United States and other Western countries have. Yeah, and it can do this thing. It's amazing because it seems unstoppable. Just ask the troops that have been trying to stop it, right? I mean, as the warhead comes out at the end, it starts a new glide path. I'll show you that in a minute. You know who knows this? The people who were just attacked by this missile in Kuwait and in Jordan and in Bahrain. And in case you think, yeah, that's probably because they got it from the Russians or somebody like the Russians, right? No. No, this thing is made in Iran. They designed it. They built it all by themselves. They started assembling this thing back in 2022 at the same time that Netanyahu and the United States were talking about the nukes that were there that didn't exist. Maybe if they'd looked the other way, they would have seen the factories that were making these. It's crazy, isn't it? To be fair, some of the technology of this thing, it's not all Iran-made. The Iranians used ideas over the last couple of decades that came from the Chinese, right, to make this missile. For example, the Chinese gave them the solid propellant manufacturing knowledge, some of the guidance components that are used there, the gyroscopes, you know, to attach to the satellites, the composite materials and the chemical combinations that are used to make the solid rocket fuel. These things were all developed by China, but the Iranians took all that technology, the information, and they built their own super missile, right? The Kabar Shikan. It's cheap, it's efficient, it's highly effective, it's hypersonic. But you know what really makes this thing unique? I'm going to show you. Let's go to the map, because I'm going to show you what this thing has. I looked it up. I mean, obviously, I'm not a military expert, so I did a bunch of research on this. It's called something that's called terminal maneuverability. Terminal maneuverability, right? Which is, in fact, they call it the zigzag missile. What the hell's a zigzag missile, right? It doesn't really zigzag. So what it is it's capable of somehow changing its direction and its descent angle during reentry. So as it's fired from Iran, let's say it's going out here to Jordan. See that right there? It's leaving from Iran and it goes up, but then after the warhead is deployed, it can literally start flying on its own, come down, go back up, and then kind of find even its target. The warhead section separates, and then it generates, like they say, it's according to my research on this, it can generate its own aerodynamic lift as it descends into a different atmosphere. It can move from side to side, they say. It can correct its course toward the target as it enters into the target area. It can steepen, it can flatten its final dive, they say. It can even correct its correction, according to some of the military analysts who've written material on this that I was going through this morning, trying to understand what makes this weapon, this missile, so different. I mean, it's what they've been using. This is what was reportedly was used to knock out the THAAD anti-missile system right there in Jordan that we reported to you last week when it happened, right? It was also used to take out the Patriot missile system, right, that was used in... Where's Kuwait? Right there, in Kuwait as well. And it was also used in Qatar, and it was also used in Bahrain, as we've been reporting, you know? So this missile has been the dagger that essentially has been pointed in the last couple of weeks at all these U.S. installations that were being hit while the United States was bombing Iran, which may have a lot to do with why the United States has stopped bombing Iran. So there, that's their missile. Some would say, I guess the cat is out of the proverbial bag at this point. All right, I want to talk to you about something else now. Kind of related to this in some ways that I was also thinking about. You know, the man the world loves to hate right now, Benjamin Netanyahu, back in Washington, and we know why he's there. The leader of this tiny country, so much smaller than most big cities. It's smaller than New York, smaller than Mexico City. A country that's smaller than Tokyo, smaller than Moscow, smaller than, I don't know, Delhi, smaller than Shanghai, by a lot. He wants the United States to fight the wars for him, for Israel. And it's worked in the past. Why not continue, right? He wants his country to be defended by the United States. He wants U.S. taxpayers to give him tens of billions of dollars. He wants U.S. soldiers to be willing to die for him and for Israel. He wants the United States, or doesn't care if the United States suffers economically and reputationally, all for the sake of Israel. Oh, and by the way, if you, Mr. United States or Mr. American, whoever you are, don't like these things or are not willing to do these things, you know what you are? You, my friend, are an anti-Semite. That's right. If you're not willing to do any of those things, you're obviously an anti-Semite. You just hate Jews. Isn't that crazy? What does one thing have to do with the other? Now, will Mr. Netanyahu is going to the United States and asking for all these things work? Well, if past is present, it will. Absolutely. Always has, probably will again. Guess who's now taking a page from Mr. Netanyahu's book, trying to convince the United States that they need to do the same thing for his country, right? Volodymyr Zelensky wants the war in Ukraine expanded. He figures if he gets more people to do the fighting for him, then he gets more money and gets to prolong the war. Maybe, I don't know. What else could he be thinking? Listen to him for yourself how he explains this this new strategy.
If Iran, from the first year of the war, gave new pace, new technology to Russia, it was Shahid drones. Mm-hmm. They gave thousands of these drones first year of the war. Then they gave licenses. What did they do? Did they attack us? I think yes. We have to be honest. Iranians and North Koreans already attacked us.
It takes a lot of nerve, doesn't it? Think about what he just did there. This is a guy whose entire war effort against Russia is being funded, guided, weaponized, managed by almost every country in Europe, and he's sitting here complaining, oh, they got some drones from some other country, therefore that other country is at war with us. Gee, where can you also make that argument? I mean, talk about crazy talk. This is like a Fellini movie, man. Here's Doug McGregor's response to Mr. Zelensky's cry for help.
Zelensky has stepped up and says, I too want to commit all the resources of the United States, its armed forces, and the interests of the American people to my war against Russia, which is effectively tied to my friend and comrade Netanyahu's war against Iran. So absolutely, he wants to expand the war. It's his last best chance in his overwrought mind. The triumvirate right now, Zelensky, Netanyahu, Trump, is meeting with the goal of trying to figure out how they can rescue strategic defeat and turn it into a victory. And the only way they can possibly do that is for us to join them.
He's so clear-minded, isn't he? You gotta hand it to Doug McGregor. He explains things so well, and he has so much experience, both militarily and geopolitically, working obviously as a colonel in the U.S. Army, a tank commander, and then at the Defense Department as well, right? I mean, this guy, by all intent and purposes, should have been the Secretary of Defense of the United States. Why he isn't is maybe why the situation is what it is right now in Iran and in Ukraine. So, but yeah, he's right. Ukraine needs to expand the war, right? Like the colonel said, because head-to-head, just, you know, let's say Russia against Ukraine, just by themselves, mano a mano, as we say in Spanish, right? He's losing. He's losing. So he needs to make it bigger, involve more countries, get the United States involved, get them to think Iran is involved. So then they'll bomb Iran. And then, you see that? I mean, this is why Zelensky's special forces and intel forces are also doing something that we've just learned about this week. Did you hear this? According to widely reported stories now, Ukrainian agents were caught in Iraq, right? Trying to do what Zelensky just said. But they're doing it, you know, undercover without anybody seeing it. Apparently doing attacks on behalf of Ukrainian intelligence against the Iraqi government. In fact, Iraqis say several of these people working for Ukraine have confessed. They say they've been arrested. Here's Iraqi's national security advisor.
A new file indicates there is Ukrainian interference in Iraq, and there are groups we are discovering that are carrying out limited bombing operations. A small group of people have been arrested. They confess to working for Ukraine and targeting some Iraqi facilities with bombs.
So the idea, apparently, what these guys were doing was they would sneak into Iraq and try and create a situation to blame the attacks on Iraqi militias with ties to Iran, right? To make it look like Iran was involved somehow in this operation, even though they weren't. Now, that sounds like something the Israeli Mossad would do, right? But in this case, it's being done by Ukraine's intel agents. And by the way, look, this is significant. Significant because it means Ukraine is trying to reach outside of Europe and into the Middle East, right? With its actions. Okay, we're going to talk about all of this, but when we come back, what is happening in Germany? Is there a change a-coming? Is there a change a-coming that will make Germany kind of, in many ways, go back to where it was before things got very difficult for the people of Germany, economically especially? While it's gotten really good, interestingly enough, for bankers and weapons makers all of a sudden. So we've been telling you about the ADF, right? It's one of the biggest political parties that's taking Germany right now. We're going to be talking about that when we come back. I am so excited about this segment. This is something I've been wanting to learn about because I've been reading so much about it. In fact, people all over the world are reading about what's happening right now with the AFD, which I recently mispronounced, by the way. I apologize. Joining us now is Markus Frontmayer. He is a member of the German Bundestag. More importantly, he's a deputy chairman of the Alternative for Germany party that everyone seems to be talking about. I've looked at some of the polls recently, by the way, and, man, they're showing that the AFD is the new darling of Germany. People are really listening to the message of the AFD, and some are even talking that it will make a very big difference in the next elections. We'll see, right? Markus, thank you so much for joining us, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
So tell us. We're just here to learn, right? I've got me and about a million or 10 million of my best friends who are going to be paying attention to you to try and better understand all over the world what's happening in Germany. First, let's just start with, what is the AFD and what is its message?
The AFD is the only party in Germany who's defending German interests and the interests of the people. I have to say, according to the latest polls, the AFD is the strongest party in Germany.
Wow.
And I believe in the next weeks, we will win the elections in the east of Germany.
And if you win the elections in the east of Germany, what does that mean for the future of how Germany will be ruled? And what happens, of course, to Chancellor Merz as a result?
Well, I don't know if you heard about it, but in Germany, you have this firewall. It's an idea that all other parties are not willing to cooperate with the AFD. And I believe if we win the elections in east of Germany, this firewall will, you know, be destroyed because they cannot any longer rule Germany without to involve somehow the AFD. And I think this is really important because people in Germany, they suffer. Friedrich Merz is the most unpopular chancellor ever, you know? I think since the founding of the Federal Republic, we never had a guy who was that less popular like Friedrich Merz.
Why?
And it's time for change.
Why do they hate him?
Because he is the chancellor of Ukraine and not the chancellor of Germany. He's doing almost nothing for the Germans, you know. We have we have really big problems. We're not any longer competitive, you know. We have high energy costs. We have a lot of regulation, high taxes. A lot of German companies leaving the country. They're going to Poland. They're going to China, to the U.S.
Yeah,
they're just leaving Germany. And if they're not big enough, they are bankrupt. And that is exactly what happens at the moment in Germany.
Haven't you been in a recession now for, what, like 3 straight years, and it only keeps getting worse? Why is that?
That's a really good question, you know, because people had a lot of hopes. They hoped that after this leftist government in the past, things would change. Because Friedrich Merz is a head of a so-called Christian Democratic Union. It might be a conservative party, but it's not, you know. In my point of view, it's even worse what happened in the past. Hmm. We have still mass migration. Every 4 hours in the southwest of Germany, people attacked by a man with a knife. We have, I don't know if you heard about it, just a few days ago, there was a terroristic attack in Berlin. And this is somehow, a normal thing now in Germany. It can happen every day. And it's time to stop it. People really waiting for a change.
Well, and there is a relationship between two things that you have just talked about. You talked a little while ago about Ukraine, right? You said that he's really the chancellor of Ukraine, which I think I know where you're going with that because of all the money from the German taxpayers' money is going to Ukraine, and I think that's one of the reasons they're angry. But when you go around the world and you are supporting wars and the people of those countries then end up coming to your country, then you have unnecessary and bloated immigration problems as well. So number one, you go around starting wars, whether it's Syria or Libya or wherever you start these wars. And then those people from those countries are in a destabilized country, so they come to your country. Now you're mad because the people are in your country, but in part, you were the reason they came, right?
Well, look, it's a simple thing. You just need to organize effective border control, and this is something what the AfD is calling for many years. We need border control, and we need to make sure that people without a legal reason to stay in Germany, that we just send them back, push them back to their home countries. And this is something what would increase the security situation dramatically in Germany. And just because you mentioned it, I think it's slowly difficult to explain to Germans while you spend 100 billion of euro on Ukraine, and in the same time, you have no money for the Germans. And this is something what they have to face now in everyday life. It starts on the gas station, and it ends up, if you want to go to a doctor, you have to pay now for your teeth and everything by your own. And this is what they did to our welfare system.
But before we leave that point, I want to make sure you understand the point that I'm making. It's hard to criticize immigrants for coming to your country when it was your country that created the problem that made them leave their country. When Germany decides that it's going to back NATO or back the United States and go into Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or Libya and bomb the hell out of those countries, destabilize the country, make the country unlivable, it's hard then, if not hypocritical, to say, well, I'm mad those people came here. In part, you're the reason they came here. And by the way, I could say the same thing about the Ukrainians who are now living in your country. You have a million of those.
Well, I think it's too simple. You know, if you ask people what is the reason why they migrate to Germany, especially from Africa, the most of them will tell you they want to send money back to their home countries. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, I'm also against interventions like happened in the past, you know. This is something what we can criticize also about our partners in the U.S., about the NATO. But in the same time, we have a migration to Europe and especially to Germany because people try to send money back to their home countries. Mm-hmm. And I do understand this, that they're looking for a better life. Yeah. But, you know, you cannot do this in a way that the Germans have to pay the bill. And this is what happens at the moment. And that's why we're asking for a border control. That's why we're asking for remigration. We want to send people back when they have no legal base to stay in our country. And this is something quite normal. I think it happens in all other countries over the world, just in Germany. I don't know why, but for our government, it's a bit difficult to do it.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm certainly not disagreeing with you. Every country has a right to control its borders. Every country should decide who gets to come in and under what conditions and in what numbers. There's nothing wrong with immigration. I'm an immigrant. My parents are from Cuba. We ended up in the United States. I would argue it's because of the United States' policies in Cuba that caused that to happen. But that's another story. We could go there for a long time. But go ahead.
If you don't mind, for me, it's important to point out that AfD is not in total against migration. If you're here in Germany on legal basis, if you're ready to learn this language, if you're ready to work hard, you're welcome in Germany. But if you commit crimes, if you hate the society, if you're not ready after 20 or 30 years to speak this language, then you need to leave Germany. Yeah. And this is a simple message.
And it's a perfectly reasonable message. There's nothing radical about what you just said. Now, you said something earlier that was interesting, too, and that is that there's an effort underway in Germany to try and block everything the AfD does as if they're bad. You know, don't associate with those people. They're the new Nazis or whatever, right, as I've heard written. In actuality, you're simply standing for German rights, and I think that they're using that. They're trying to boogeyman you. They're trying to make you the boogeyman. Is that how you see it?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's easy to tell people that the AfD is the boogeyman. It's much more easy than to try to solve the problems in Germany. And as I said, we have really, really problems with our economy. Hmm. The reasons are simple. Like I said, high energy costs, because they decided for ideological reasons to, you know, to stop to use nuclear power plants, gas, like, I don't know, Nord Stream, and so on. And they believe that a country like Germany can be run by solar cells and wind energy. And this is ridiculous. It will not work. And this is what we can see nowadays. Every day, look, I'm from the southwest of Germany.
Yeah.
It's the powerhouse. You know, companies like Porsche, Mercedes, Bosch, and so on are located in this region. And what we can face at the moment is that every 25 minutes, we're losing a job in this region. And this is dramatically.
When you have a chancellor who is really a BlackRock banker, because that's what he is. He's a banker from BlackRock, right? Notoriously one of the companies that control the world and could give a crap about the little guy or the average German or the average American or the average anything, for that matter. How much does it seem to you that plays into the fact that it's not just Merz, but so many of the establishment politicians really could give a crap about the people they're governing, and they're more concerned about benefiting the bankers and the weapons manufacturers and the big tech guys and those types of people who you just described?
Look, I see these guys almost every week, and in my point of view, they're just not able to do it. Hmm. It's maybe the answer is too simple, but Friedrich Merz is not able to organize a government. You just can observe this nowadays when, 2 days ago, he kicked out a minister, and this guy heard about it in the media. And yeah, what should I say? I think this guy is not able to be a head of a government and to take responsibility. And there's no need for a kind of, you know, like theories that he's paid by someone or I don't know what. If you look at Friedrich Merz and just observe the history of this guy, he tried almost three times, I guess, to be chancellor in Germany. He tried to win against Angela Merkel and so on, and all the time he was not able to do it. And so it's a story of
incompetence.
Sorry to say, loser.
What you're saying, what I hear you saying is, let me give you the word, maybe my English is a little better than yours. You're saying, yes. You're saying he's incompetent. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That means he can't do it because he doesn't have the skills. He's incapable of being able to lead the country.
This is what we can observe every day.
You see it with your own eyes. What do you mean?
And we feel it in our pockets.
can you give me specifics about his incompetence? Is there, if you were to ask me about Mr. Trump's incompetence, okay. I would share those with you. Mr. Biden's incompetence, by the way. Go ahead.
Just imagine you would do a whole campaign, election campaign, with the promise that you will not do new debts. There's something in Germany what forbids
borrowing.
A specific percentage of debts, okay?
Yeah.
It's called Schuldenbremse in German. And this guy campaigned almost 1 year that he will be he will save this principle. And overnight, he forgot about it, you know? He did 180 degree difference what he said during his election campaign. He promised people to send back all illegal immigrants and to make Germany safe again, and he failed. You know, nowadays in Germany, it's almost impossible to go to a Christmas market without a lot of security controls, policemen with guns, and so on. And this is nothing what we had to face in the past. I was born in the 90s, 91, to be honest. And, it was not a problem to go 10, 15, 20 years ago to the Love Parade in Berlin with more than 1 million people to celebrate, to dance. There was no security controls. There was no Islamistic terrorists. There was nothing. There was nothing, you know? You could you had a free life. And this is something what totally changed in the last years. And Friedrich Merz promised people to organize a strong economy, to make Germany safe again, and so on, and he failed.
And yet, you know, I think it's weird when I look at how much the German people are suffering economically, because they're being asked to pay so much more, just for example, power bills, everything having to do with heating their homes. The businesses of Germany are having to pay more. They take it out on their employees and have to remove employees because they can't afford it. And all of this is a self-sustained wound. It's like Germany took a dagger and stuck it in its own heart. It had some of the cheapest energy in the world coming from pipelines from Russia. And you can like Russia, not like Russia, not like Russian music, hate Russia. It doesn't matter. It's business. If they're giving you something, you should take it. They're now paying three times more for the same amount of oil, or actually worse, oil and gas, as a matter of fact. What do you make of that?
Well, in my point of view, it's crazy, because after what happened to Nord Stream, our prices for gas increased more than 45%. It almost doubled. And do you know what the German government is doing at the moment? We still have a contract with the Russians to get energy, but we're not taking it. The Indians are taking it.
Yes.
And then they sell it more expensive back to Germany.
Yes, I've
seen. And this is absolutely weird. In my view, in my opinion, you cannot do this if you're a German politician all the time, you have to do Germany first. And this is what not happens at the moment. So I don't think that it's a smart policy at the moment when it's about energy in Germany.
Can you explain to the people of Russia why I'm in Moscow right now, interestingly enough, and the Russians are like any other people all over the world. I think they're wonderful people, just like I think the Germans are wonderful people. And Berlin is a beautiful city. I went there recently when my son got married. My wife and I love traveling through Germany, just like we love being here now in Moscow. I find that people are people. I actually find that right now, Moscow is a safer place when it comes to security, when it comes to family values, when it comes to taking care of, you know, the interests of the people, as much as any place I've seen in the world. So I guess it's a roundabout way of my asking you, what is it about Russia that the Germans or maybe the German politicians despise? Why do you want to go to war with Russia? Why do you hate Russia? Why are you willing to pay more just to avoid Russian oil? Explain that to Russians.
Well, I think we have different opinion about the security situation. But I think in general, what I can tell you is that not all Germans want to have a conflict or a war with Russia. I have to tell clear, we want to have peace in Ukraine.
Yeah.
But you need to, you know, you need honest negotiations and an honest deal. And I cannot I cannot see that in the past, for example, our colleagues in Britain or in Paris, you know, that they try to offer a peace deal what makes sense for both sides, because in the end of the day, both sides need to make a compromise. And from a German perspective, we want to have good relations with Russia because it was all the time a reliable energy partner. And I think there's also a common culture, you know, hundreds of years common culture and history between Germany and Russia. And this is something what we should not forget, because we're not in a war with Russia. Ukraine is not part of the European Union. Ukraine is not part of the NATO. And this is something what we're criticizing our government, that, you know, that they, how to say, that they involve more than they have to do in this conflict. There is no need to do this because we never gave Ukraine guarantees. We have no contracts about this. To be honest, we sent them now 100 billion euro and we got nothing for this.
Oh, you got plenty. Oh, no, you're wrong. Sorry, I have to correct you. You got plenty for that 100 billion. There's a lot of very wealthy men and women inside of Germany. When you say we, I don't think, I know you're referring to yourself and you're referring to the average German who got screwed, but there are plenty of very wealthy people who are in the mind and in the pocket of Mr. Merz who are doing very well and want this war to continue because they are making a ton of money off of this war. You do understand that.
Of course, I mean, it's also a nice excuse, you know. If you're not able to run a country, or like you said, incompetent, then you need someone to make responsible for it. And I hear this that often during the debates in the plenary sessions, that these politicians from the old parties pointed out that just because of Vladimir Putin, just because of Donald Trump and so on, they're responsible that Germany is not any longer competitive, you know, and I think this is a bad excuse. They need to be responsible for what they do. And this is something what I expect from German politicians.
Did you ever ask yourself this? Because I've asked myself a million times this question. If NATO was developed to defend itself from the bad Soviet Union, those communists, filthy communists who were in the USSR at one point. And then in the early 1990s, the USSR stopped being the USSR, and Russia is now a capitalist, you could certainly argue, democratic country that doesn't believe in any of those things anymore and put its hand out to Germany and the UK and America and say, we want to be your friends. Why does NATO still exist? Why do you want to, you exist to destroy a country that don't no longer exists, so why do you still exist?
Well, I think that the issues what NATO had to face in the, you know, after the 2000s, I think it was different. And it makes sense to be in a strong defense cooperation, and that's why Germany is in the NATO. To be honest, I have absolutely no problem with the NATO, but it's important that we not forget our roots. The NATO should be a defense alliance and not a kind of offensive alliance doing interventions all over the world and so on. And I think if you're organizing a maturity in this organization to make clear what is the root of the organization, self-defense and so on, then it's a good thing. But if you change the meaning of the NATO, like it happened in the last maybe 10, 15 years, something what we have to be critical about.
Yeah, when NATO attacked Belgrade and bombed Belgrade, that was not defensive, that was offensive. When Victoria Nuland went into Ukraine and was caught on tape, literally planning the coup d'etat in Kiev, where they would literally take over the government of Ukraine and make sure it was anti-Russia, I can understand where that would be seen as aggressive and offensive and not defensive. And many people in Russia argue that's the reason the Russians decided that they had to go in and try and stop that, because NATO was about to take over all of Ukraine and make it an anti-Russian country. So, I mean, look, we can argue about this. Some people agree, some people disagree, but it's a point of view that I don't think is taken into account in the West, is it?
Well, I mean, I was in 2015 in Donbass, and I was quite often in Belgrade. And what I can tell is that, of course, in Serbia, people have a different view when it comes up to NATO, also in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what happened in Ukraine in 2014 and 15, in my point of view, it was a color revolution. And this is something what we're against. We're against interventions in sovereign countries, you know? And this is something what should not happen. And it happened in the past, and this is something what a lot of, you know, patriotic parties all over Europe are critical about, I can say.
Yeah, because then it ends up, after they do those interventions, then they have to follow up the interventions, and then it turns into either a conflict or a war or battles, and that ends up costing the people, not the ones who are calling for these wars. They end up making money for it. So, yeah, no, I think you and I are in basic agreement that that's one of the things that I think the AFD stands for. I think what the AFD's message is, what I get from you, is take care of the German people. Make sure the German people have the things that they need, their inalienable rights that were given to them from God, not by man. And make sure those things are protected. And then if you have some time and some money left over, then go to Ukraine and see what you can do for them. But don't spend all your time and money in Ukraine or in Belgrade or in any of these, or in Iraq or in any of these other countries. Did I represent you fairly?
Well, yeah, but we're talking about human aid, you know, foreign aid and so on. We're totally against sending weapons to Ukraine and so on. This is nothing what the AFD stands for. And yeah, like you said, we're a sovereignist party. We want to care about our own people. It's a simple thing. First, make sure that your own house is okay, and then you can help your neighbor, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, listen, I'm impressed. Everything I've read, everything I've seen makes you look to me like you're not what they say. You're not Nazis. You're not hateful. You're not anti-immigrant. You're just saying you want Germany to be for Germans, and you want the policies to change so that they benefit Germans. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. And you, Marcus, have defended your point of view very well. And I thank you so much for being so gracious with your time and sharing your perspective with us the way you have. It's very kind of you to do that. And I look forward to talking to you once again. Maybe we'll make a trip to Germany and we'll do some shows from there at sometime in the near future. That would be great.
Just tell me. You're always welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
That's so kind of you. We'll take you up on that. I think it's time that RT do some shows, or the Sanchez Effect do some shows exactly from there. Thank you, my friend. Look forward to seeing with you in the future. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So, wasn't that a fascinating conversation? I've always wanted to better understand the AFD. And I have to tell you the truth. I bought into the stereotype at first. I thought, oh my God, these people are crazy. They're right-wing Nazis. They hate all immigrants. They want to kill everybody who doesn't look like them. They're white nationalists, you know, because that's what they say about them. You just saw my conversation with him. I challenged him. I mean, he doesn't sound like an unreasonable person. He just sounds like somebody to me who's trying to make sure that his country does what's right by the people of Germany. Fascinating, fascinating. I'm glad you were there. I'm glad we had a chat. Tell me what you think, by the way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't understand. Maybe there's something I don't get, but it does seem that way to me. By the way, if you want to tell us what you think, we're going to post a lot of this stuff very soon. It's going to be on X, and it's going to be on Spotify, and it's going to be on YouTube, and it's going to be on BitChute, which I adore because they don't take things out. They don't cancel. You know, they don't we don't put things there and then they make them disappear like some of the others do. So, check us out. Tell us what you think, whether you think I'm right or wrong. Doesn't matter. And thanks, most of all, for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again next time.